Welcome to Dental Brain Crops. I'm your host, Chelsea Myers, and Dr. Alan Stern and I have been having so much fun before the show. We decided we better just go ahead and hit record and go live here so that we can include everybody in this conversation. But Alan, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Chelsea, it's such a privilege, and maybe we'll get into this as to why I think this is so awesome. We met last year at IADLC, International Academy of Dental Life, and immediately a bond of friendship was struck. And I am just delighted to spend time with you, and I'm thankful for your presence in this world also.
Oh, thank you. Oh my gosh, your impact has just been so tremendous. I'm going to read your intro here, and then I want to get into so many questions. There's so many things that I've grown from just knowing you and being in your presence and in your energy, and I'm excited to share that with everyone. But so you have a 42-year career in dentistry, 36 as a solo practice owner, and it said, made some terrific business and management blunders that left you living paycheck to paycheck in your 50s. And I think that was one of the topics of the talk that I heard that really, I'm like, I got to know this guy. I need to reach out to him because your story is just so incredible. So I'm excited to get into that. It says you were 35 pounds overweight and miserable. And that with the help of a therapist and a peak performance coach, a nutritionist, personal trainers, and a private practice coach, financial advisor, and it sounds like just putting yourself around the right people, your path was illuminated so that you could really step into light and live the life that you wanted to live and design it that way.
And you have to throw in a really, really great wife.
A really, really great wife. Yes. And while we're doing that, I'll give tons of credit to my husband, who is kind enough to stand by me as I grow each day, because it is a journey. But Alan, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks, Chelsea. This is great. We're going to have a lot of fun, and anything that I can contribute, I'm ready.
Well, let's start with that talk that you gave, because I think that, you know, high performers, we like to hang out where we're confident. And sometimes if we're not aware, we're accidentally or intentionally ignoring areas that really desperately need our attention. And so when I heard that talk and you shared that you had this, you know, you came to a crossroads where you had to make some decisions, I feel like a lot of us find ourselves there in some way, shape, or form. Would you mind sharing a little bit about that process?
Sure. And let's understand also that if your bad decisions are coming from a place that is legal, moral, and ethical with good intent, almost all of them are reversible. Ask me how I know. So, you know, I'm very open about my upbringing. I am the son of a Holocaust survivor. And my hero mother really had the belief ingrained in her that Jewish people were put in the world to suffer. That was her life from her formative years into her early 20s. And my goodness, how could she have known any better? Children of Holocaust survivors have this kind of syndrome going, and it's tough. And I also had another relative who shall remain nameless. That person is still alive, who beat me down verbally at every step of the way. Dental school, frontal assault on your self-esteem. Those of us who are susceptible really have a rougher go of it in school than those who are not. And dot, 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 that led me down the primrose path of really trying to prove myself to be something other than what I was. And that led me to some pretty crummy decisions, some pretty stupid ones. And, you know, buying a house that I couldn't afford, hiring coaches and consultants and hanging on to them when they weren't right for me, because all the big boys used those big time coaches. I wanted to be a big boy. Mm-hmm. And one of the marketing consultants that I used, who did the big boys, had me on radio once a week. And one of the things you may or may not know about me, put me in front of a microphone and, you know, I'll go 12 hours. If conciseness were a virtue, Chelsea, I would burn in hell. So I had celebrity status in my town. Hey, you're Dr. Stern from the radio. I had a nice house. I had a Lexus. Mm-hmm. Hey, love that Lexus. And all of a sudden, in my 50s, my wife and I are paycheck to paycheck. What? I went to the Pankey Institute. This shouldn't be happening to me. I deserve this, right? But the numbers were telling me, wrong. Better change something. That was a crossroads for me. I modified my life. And once I did that, once I got the 800-pound gorilla out of my room, life got really good. Really good. It didn't matter to me that when Chelsea Myers came in and needed a mouthful of veneers. By the way, you have a gorgeous smile.
Thank you.
And I present this case, and Chelsea Myers says to me those dreaded words, "I'll think about it." Oh, man, that's the slap in the face. But at that point, once I adjusted my life, yeah, okay, next. And by the way, we're going to Vegas next week anyway. We didn't care. So things got a lot easier. So I made silly decisions. I made them out of low self-esteem. I made them out of trying to show the world what I wasn't. Where showing the world what I am is quite good enough. And as a result of those good decisions, I am rewired and refired. I sold my practice. I've just sold my house. And we're going to be moving to a beautiful retirement, well, a refirement community.
Refirement.
Refirement and rewirement community, where we'll have everything that we want. And yeah, I'll be doing this as long as I can think and talk and walk. Dream come true, Chelsea. This is a dream come true.
Is that a quote out of your book? Because that was so beautiful the way you said, you know, I was making all of these decisions to show the world what I wasn't, which I'm filling in the blanks there. You're not a nobody. You're not someone who lives in a small house or drives a regular car. You're important. Is that what you're going for?
What I was going for in the blunder was to show things that are optically really cool, but inwardly extremely stressful. The house, the radio spot, the Lexus. I kept the Lexus. I like that car.
I love the Lexus, yeah.
But once I made those changes, I realized, and by the way, all through this process, my peers all respected me. I had it. I just didn't know it. And once I made those changes in my life, I was able to prove to myself and therefore show the world that I've got something. And I've got something valuable to give. And somebody asked me if I would change anything that I did in the past, Chelsea. And the answer is not really. Not really. Would my life have been different if I had been more prudent? Yeah. But those adversities have led me to this point. I don't know if I would be as enthused and as energetic about what I'm doing had life gone on like a pseudo perfect storybook. Mm-hmm. I think our triumphs, it's not the good times, it's not the successes that teach us things. It is those fall on your face times that are the biggest life teachers.
It's the truth. And, you know, it requires some sort of awakening to take place before we can really get there. Because I think, you know, we share a similar type of, you know, upbringing in some ways where it leaves you looking externally for validation, constantly trying to refill your cup with everybody else's opinion and perception. But what's really interesting, it's like that quote, you know, some people will vote for you no matter what you do because you're you. And some people will not vote for you no matter what you do because you're you, right? And so the trick is finding your people. And it sounds like you had surrounded yourself, even though you're making some of those decisions, you'd surrounded yourself with enough of the right people where when you made those transitions and those changes for your financial health, for your mental health, for your physical health, they were on your team still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My friends, my support group, the peers that mattered, and mm-hmm. the newer people in my life, like the one I'm talking to, it's all been so powerful. I'll tell you one really cool story. The tipping point. Mm-hmm. The tipping point was in April of 2014. I did what every busy dentist does first thing in the morning. I checked my Facebook feed. And my good friend, Sherry Kay, who was one of my Panky friends, mm-hmm. puts up a picture of a woman named Andrea Bierman, 34 years old, stunningly gorgeous, stunningly brilliant, stunningly successful. Everybody wanted to know what Andrea's doing. Andrea walked in the room would stop. And everybody would go to Andrea. They wanted to know what she was thinking. And she would be she's so generous with her time and her knowledge and her listening. And Andrea's picture was on there and it said RIP. Andrea Bierman took her own life at age 34.
Oh.
And this was me seeing this after years of therapy with a world-class therapist, working with a peak performance coach, and understanding what my triumph was. I called a buddy of mine in Kansas, Jim Otten, who in the same state as Andrea practiced, and Jim was on the board of the Panky Institute. And we went down there and we were able to get time at the Panky alumni meeting. And we did a tribute to Andrea's life and we did a little research project on depression and suicide in dentistry. And we found it is not a wives' tale as we know today. And mm-hmm. we did this project. Four out of about 150 of the most accomplished dentists in the United States came up to Jim Otten and me and said, thank you. Four out of 150 super successful people were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I knew I had something to give. If little old me, little poor self-efficacy, got to prove something me, could come up with this that impacted people that I looked up to, people that I knew I could never be like because they were so darn successful, I had something. That's how it happened. That was the tipping point.
Isn't that so beautiful? And we spend all of this time and energy trying to qualify our worth so that, because we know we've got that thing to share and we want to qualify it so that you'll think it's important enough what I'm about to say because I know I can help you. But the energy is spent in those qualifying efforts rather than just sharing the things you have to share. So, you know, I'd really love to lay it all out because I think there are a lot of people that know that they are making serious financial or health or mental or spiritual blunders. And I think we do a great job of freaking ourselves out in advance about what that change is going to be like. So it's not comfortable, but let's lay it out. So when you go to make a change and you decide this is it, what actually happens? How do people respond? How does it feel? And what does that process involve?
Ooh, wow. That's a big one. When you go to make a change, look, everybody's afraid of the unknown. Our amygdalas kick in, our fight or flight reptilian brain kicks in inappropriately because it's perceived as some kind of threat. It is a shake of the status quo. And that primitive reptilian brain starts kicking up the cortisol and it is frightening. We fear change. But the great motivational speaker of the 20th century, Earl Nightingale, said 98% of the things we're afraid of don't come true. They just don't happen.
I love Earl. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you want to make the change. I had to sell my house under duress. And the one person who could have stopped it all was my wife. And she said, no, we got to do this. Let's do it. So it felt, it was an inner earthquake. I really thought I would lose my status. I was worried about what others would think. Mm-hmm. And others didn't think a daggone thing other than it's Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there are a couple of them out there that thought otherwise. So, like what you said before, you know, some of, you'll please some of them, and you'll always have detractors. Mm-hmm. That's just life, because not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to approve of you. It's just reality. You got to approve of yourself. That's where it starts. You know, the old Brené Brownism, I am imperfect, I am enough.
Yes.
It took a for a dentist to realize that. My friend Jim Otten, who I spoke with at the Pankey Institute in memory of Andrea, he turned me on to that thinking. And Jim is a highly accomplished practitioner. You can be imperfect. In fact, you are imperfect. And when you come to realize that that's just part and parcel of human existence, and you lean into that, I have a couple of anxiety drivers right now, Chelsea, and I am just doing my imperfect best to lean into them, to grab onto them, and get control of them. Mm-hmm. And 98% chance that I am going to be right. That's all going to be all right. And I think in the world of dentistry, no matter what role you play in dentistry, owner doc, associate doc, team member, I don't care, you're going to screw it up every now and then. Mm-hmm. And that is okay if you're legal, moral, ethical, coming with a good intent and a semi-reasonable level of intelligence. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. So we have to focus not on the critic, but on the support team. And remember full well that the greatness is in the journey. And looking back now, whatever greatness people think I've attained is as a result of my journey. It's not the outcome. It's not the outcome. It's the journey. It's the path we take to get us here.
Right. Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. And, you know, you brought up Brené Brown, and she said, vulnerability sounds like truth and feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they're never weakness.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, what qualifies you to help people? Yeah, we can learn something and then teach someone the thing that we read, or, you know, the thing that to study for the test or whatever. But what actually qualifies you to develop someone at a really deep and personal level is going through the deep and personal struggle and then being willing to share it. And that is one of the reasons I just have so much admiration for you, is your willingness to share with others about what this journey has been like. So, okay. So for a, you know, struggling person, and we know you've said it's going to be uncomfortable. There are going to be some people on your team, those that aren't, those are the voices that don't get a seat at the table in our head. And then we make the change. Do you feel like it gets easier as you put momentum behind the new result you're after?
Momentum is key. I think momentum, even more than, oh, something so crass as cash flow, even momentum, even more than the number of new patients or new clients you and I may see. Mm-hmm. The momentum, I very honestly, Chelsea, this is momentum for me, in addition to a million other things. But yes, the momentum keeps you going. I have several books of Alanisms that are in the works. And Alanism number one, by the way, show me a person without stress and I'll show you a cadaver. And down the list of that is, you are your mindset at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times, and I am certain that it happens to you also, where you just think, you know, you got the imposter syndrome digging at you. You've got a little lull, or you may have a stressor coming in your life. The sooner you get yourself out of that mindset and understand that you are a person on a mission with something really valuable to give, it becomes almost what we used to call a self-fulfilling prophecy. don't fake it till you make it. That's another Alanism. Play the part with all your heart. That gives momentum. Just keep going. If you're in a dental practice, just keep going. Learn, 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 apply, 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 and never, ever forget that it's not about the inlay, the onlay, the all on X. It's about the person. It's about the person at the end of those instruments. If you keep your focus on that, your momentum will go, go, go. Never lose track of the sacred nature of your work.
Yeah, you know, and I don't remember if it, now it's blurred. Was this before show or during the show that we talked about this? But we were talking about the importance of really getting clear on why you're doing what you're doing, because it really makes all the difference. And I know there's so much, particularly in the last few years, about, you know, what is your why? What is your why? But the reason for that, I've got a story. I had a client who, you know, he was just kind of going through the motions and not performing at the level that he could, but not underperforming, just kind of, you know, floating by. And we got to talking and I was like, you know, how are you doing on your goals? How are you leading your team? And he's like, yeah, you know, doing okay. And I asked him some probing questions about, why are you even doing this? You're a very intelligent person. You could be doing anything. And after a series of conversations, it's like the light bulb went off and he said, you know why I'm doing this? Because my whole life I watched my mom in and out of dentist's office. She never could get rid of the disease in her mouth. She'd just chip away at it one little bit at a time as we could afford. And I just want to help people at least know what's going on in their mouth and at best get rid of it. And he smiled and he said, you know, this year I finally got rid of all of the disease in my mom's mouth for the first time since I've known her. Her mouth is healthy. And he's like, that's why I'm doing it. It gives me goosebumps just remembering the light in his eyes. And from then on, he was able to lead his team with increased confidence. And he was able to perform at a higher level because it was fueled by something inside him that was so much bigger than, as you say, you know, just checking off a task list or working through the schedule.
Well, you so talk about, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, yeah, how do we do that? How do we discover that?
And you forgot when I told something. Number one, not only do I not know if I answered your question, but number two, I had to jot down something that occurred to me as you were speaking. So this gentleman obviously, you know, latched onto his why, and restoring his mom, put it on steroids and off he goes. And that's awesome. I think what I'm seeing today in fact, I would dare say what you and I and all of our colleagues at IADLC are seeing is young dentists losing that way too quickly. And I think the external pressures that are put on dentistry are causing us to react in a certain way where we begin to lose that. I hate the word passion. It's so overused. But the love of our career, the elements that drove us to go into dentistry, all of a sudden we get distracted, whether it's insurance, whether it's consumerism, whether it's that one Miss McNasty that comes into the office and gives us a hard time, whereas everybody else is Miss McNice. You know, Miss McNasty can do it to us. A disgruntled team member, all these things can throw us. Oh, and regulation. It's hurting us and it's driving the why out of us. And I think that is a huge source of burnout in all of us. And it particularly concerns me about the younger people who are starting to use that word. And I think we need to take a step away from ourselves. We need to just look at ourselves from above and say, what the heck is going on here? I went into dentistry for this and all this. Can I say crap?
Yes.
We're in New Jersey here, folks, so bear with me. All of these things are distracting and throwing us off of our why. And it is imperative that we reconnect with that. We may have to modify what we do a little bit for a changing world, but we have to retain that why. The why comes before the what, and the what comes before the how. Mm-hmm. That's how the why has to be the baseline, the foundation for everything that you do. And I believe that is a huge part of the cure for burnout.
Yeah. And, you know, I love the practice of asking the five layers of why, because you might ask, you know, particularly you talked about our younger dentists coming into the profession and it's like, well, I want financial freedom, but why? Mm-hmm. Well, because I want to be able to do X, Y, and Z, but why? And when you can really get into that self-discovery and understand how they want to feel and the connections and experiences that are the most important to them, now we're getting something we can work with and build a blueprint off of.
Yes. And I think the key there, Chelsea, you're 100% right, is how will I feel when I get this?
Mm-hmm.
Connect to the emotion. In fact, in treatment planning, what we crassly call case presentation, yeah. I think a very big element, it drives me nuts when a dentist gives a computer printed out treatment plan, you know, crown here, root canal there, implant here, so on and so forth, and the fee breakdown here. Take a look at this if you have any questions. No, Mr. or Ms. Patient, what would you like to see? How will you feel mm-hmm. when we get X, Y, and Z, when we do that aesthetic case, when we restore your ability to chew, or whatever it is that a person is looking for? It's the end result is the emotion, the feeling of a great smile, a comfortable mouth, a peaceful existence for a dentist. Why mm-hmm. do you want to make all that? Yeah, all that money. Yeah. I mean, I am where I am because I want to now spend time doing this and spend some time with my family that and my friends that I've sacrificed to get myself to where I am. So, yeah, it's that deep, deep level of emotion. So we're in the emotion business. No question about it. You and I are, and our fellow dentists are. We're all in the emotion business.
Yes. And, you know, I was just at Yankee Dental and several times throughout the multi-site summit, the importance of culture came up and how it impacts the value of your practice, how it impacts the experience people have in your practice and, you know, patients and team members alike. And then your experience, I would add, going home and your experience in your home and with your family and with your community, it impacts everything. And it all starts with that emotional process. We have to manage that emotional process of ourselves and the people we're leading the whole way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? There's a lesson here in dentistry too, because we get so driven by the technical result. And we should do good work. And we get so driven by the cash flow. Yeah, that's our survival.
Mm-hmm.
But look at what's happening. How many times have you called something, even a physician's office, and you go through 12 layers of prompts before you get to a human being?
Right.
The cable company. Oh, don't, you know, that'll age you 100 years in 10 minutes. The world is starving for empathy, for emotional connection. I'll go back to Brené Brown, the irreducible need for love and belonging. How, if we make our dental offices a place of love and belonging, a place of empathy, put a little love in your practice, and man, the money will be there, but the other things will be there too. And the burnout, the flame of the burn is going to reduce. Put a little love in there. Yeah.
It really is the secret ingredient, because, you know, what I'm seeing, and I'm sure you've seen this probably even more than I have, but when you don't have that consistent level of love, that secret ingredient, I find that our associates and our team members, they are responding to each situation, but it's not transferring because they are more than anything, they're accommodating what we're saying in that moment because we're coming off as stressed. They want to diffuse the discomfort of dealing with us in that moment. So, okay, yes, I'll do it the way you want me to do, but it's not translating to those repeatable, you know, profitable results in our practice because we're missing a very, very vital component of the human capital mm-hmm. that we're working with. We've got to have that love and that connection and that bond that that creates those predictable results.
You know, you just ruined my life.
You really did. No.
Because I've got a program called The One Missing Ingredient, and we just we let the cat out of the bag.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
thanks, you, spoiler alert, guys. This is one thing.
Spoiler alert. Well, I think Rhonda Byrne beat me to it when she wrote The Secret. So.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't count.
It's not a secret anymore. Oh, but it's so true.
By the way, the other important thing is what you and I just did. Create moments of laughter.
Yes. And
so much fun. Offline, I'll tell you a story of what I did to a patient who was terrible. Uh-oh. But no, I'm not going to do that here. But humor is so important. And, you know, love is a really wacky word because it, you know, love, the love between ourselves and our spouses, ourselves mm-hmm. and our children, it's different and it evolves over time. You know, the love that my wife and I experience, it looks much different than it did 46 years. Holy smoke.
Wow, congratulations.
She got 5 good years out of it. She's got nothing to complain about. But but the love of family is much different than the love of team member, is much different than the love mm-hmm. of patient. But you can manifest it in a very appropriate way, in a very effective way. And, you know, it starts with yourself, starts with loving yourself and extending that and projecting that out. I can't tell you how many times I've encountered a mundane situation, going shopping, going to Starbucks, going anywhere, mm-hmm. and just ending the discussion with either a smile or a pleasantry. It just enhances life, and we can take that anywhere we go. Throw some love into the mix and watch life change.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I love that you say that. So here's a question for you. So you and I have spent a significant portion of our lives researching and learning about the mind and the power of our thinking and how that translates to the results in our lives. Do you ever find that you still have moments or, you know, periods of time where you're not in a good place? And if so, what do you do?
Oh, I'm never in a bad place. My life is a perfect story. Now,
do you tell the truth all the time?
No, I'm seeking political office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, we're hardwired with things that we can't control. And my upbringing hardwired me with things. And our brains are hardwired to respond to threat. And any and all of those factors can really contribute to our inappropriate level of stress to things that are not existentially threatening. And yeah, I have those moments. And I'll tell you, I have them almost every day. Mm-hmm. And what do I do about it? Sometimes it goes out of control and I've just got to let it pass. I've just got to ride it out. I've got to also lean into it and get my facts straight. And over time, just guide myself back to what I know is right. Yes, it happens to every one of us. And I don't think anybody watching this or listening to this should be under the illusion that any of us have it 100% right. The nice thing is that we can see others' blind spots. But I don't know about you, Chelsea, but I need people who help me see mine. Because they're there. We all have them.
Absolutely. I made a post about that a while back. I would never hire a coach that doesn't have a coach, because I think one of the things that qualifies me, there are a couple of things. My experience qualifies me to help people where I've been, and I need additional experience to help people for where I'm going, right? Yeah. And so I always need to be surrounded by people who, like yourself, who have seen things and done things and been places that I maybe haven't yet, because it expands my vantage point.
Yeah, no one gets there alone.
No.
The finest athletes, the best performers, the slimiest politicians, I mean, our biggest leaders, they all have handlers, coaches, advisors.
Absolutely.
We're no different. Mm-hmm. We're no different. So, yeah, just, you know, look at your vulnerability. Look at the problems that you have as challenges, as things to overcome and come out better as a result of. And if you can't do it yourself, we're dentists. We don't know everything. I was 35 pounds overweight with a belly that just looked like I was pregnant. And I was 58 years old, and I looked at a picture of myself and, oh my goodness, this is ridiculous. And I went to my chiropractor, one of the people who saved my life. And I said to him, Raj, something's wrong here. All I have at night is a diet ice cream. And he poked me in the belly. He goes, how's that working out for you? We had that relationship where he was able to bust on me for it. And yeah. He led me to a nutritionist who basically taught me what I thought I knew everything about. I knew nothing about it. Financial advisor, the right one, taught me things I knew nothing about. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, I'm a doctor. I have that DR in front of my name. That doesn't mean anything outside of this area here. It doesn't
Right. And I think that's just the beauty of the getting there, getting to that level of confidence where it's like, you know, Chelsea, I know a lot about what I know about, and that's my perimeter, you know, and then I need experts outside of that if I want knowledge outside of my expertise. Yeah. And it's just, it's an initial discomfort of admitting you don't know everything that comes with a tremendous benefit of now having access to the development.
Yeah. I love that condition. I really have grown to embrace my imperfections because I get better as I just make them a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do. I'm just reading something now, a book by Adam Grant called Hidden Talent. And it's not, perfectionism is the enemy. And we could have a whole nother podcast on that nonsense.
I was just thinking this needs to be multi-part.
I'd love to do this again. I've got a little bit of a time constraint. This is so much fun. And I hope the people listening to this are enjoying it and getting something valuable. But, you know, perfect is the enemy of done. My good friend and my coach, Mark LeBlanc, taught me that. But Adam Grant writes, it's not about being perfect. It's not about being right. It's not even about doing your best, because sometimes we're not at our best. Get over it. It's about, did you make somebody's life better today? And are you a little bit better, either as a result of it or just as a process of growth? Are you a little bit better today? And or have you made somebody's life better? That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. How am I being in this day?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Such a good note to end on. I agree. We need to do this again. I love that. I love the wisdom that you share. I love the beauty of your experience. We didn't even get to the most beautiful thing that you wrote me or wrote. Is everybody going to have access to that?
Which one?
Your letter. Yeah.
That is being published in an edited form, because if conciseness were a virtue, I'd burn in hell.
But, well, I'm so glad I was privileged to the non-concise version.
You are one of two or three people who saw that in advance, but I'd be very glad to discuss that. Benko is publishing it in their spring edition. Magazine. They asked me for that. And, mm-hmm. I let Benko just edited professionally, because it was a long-winded piece, but we can discuss that next time gladly as part of what we do. I'm glad to spend time with you, Chelsea.
Well, I'm glad to spend time with you too. And thank you for coming on today. This was a lot of fun.
This is a dream come true for me.
I appreciate you joining me for today's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And visit dentallife.coach for access to additional coaching tools, as well as more episodes to help you create the dental life you truly desire.